Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, January the 21st, I guess the day after we inaugurated a new president. You know, we have a lot to get into because it's been a busy day in the nation's capital, a busy day for the new president. But I just want to tell you that I was not overwhelmed or, you know, impressed. I thought the speech that President Biden gave was, you know, pretty ordinary. I wouldn't put it as a great speech. But at the end of the day, I don't think anybody was offended or anybody was impacted. I mean, I just think it was in many ways the type of speech we're going to get from Joe Biden. Joe Biden was never known as a great speaker or somebody who would inspire people. You know, that's just not him. That's just not him. So I didn't anticipate, you know, a high energy speech like the one we heard from Donald Trump 4 years ago. So, as I said, the speech didn't, you know, offend me, but it didn't do anything for me either. I just thought it was another speech for the history books, and that's about it. Now, President Biden has spent much of the last 18 hours as president writing executive orders. In fact, I think he's got 17 of them that he's written. And this has now become a popular thing for presidents to do. On the first day in office, they reverse the executive orders of their predecessor. And I'm sure the next Republican president will do the same. So it's kind of what we do now, what we do now. And he issued a bunch of executive orders, anywhere from the Keystone Pipeline, which is really dumb, really, because that is really creating a diplomatic problem with the Canadians. He also issued, he terminated, I guess, construction of the U.S.-Mexico border wall. I'm not exactly sure where he gets the authority to terminate a project underway. I mean, some of these executive orders are based on authority that is not real clear to me where he gets it. Like, I think there's another one where he is canceling deportations for the next 100 days or something like that. I'm not exactly sure where the president gets that kind of authority. I thought that the immigration laws had to be passed by Congress. But anyway, that's where we are. He issued a bunch of executive orders on many different topics. Now, as a matter of governing, if I could put it that way, executive orders are actually not that strong, because an executive order is something that will very likely be challenged in the courts, and who knows what will happen, but many of these executive orders are going to be running into a judge here pretty soon by some of the different states. I mean, some of the states impacted by the cancellation of the Keystone Pipeline, I'm sure will be running to a courtroom pretty soon, asking the same question I'm asking is, you know, where does the president of the United States get the authority to cancel a project like this? But what executive orders really tell you, when you get through all of them, what they really tell you is that President Biden does not think that he's got the votes in the Congress to do any of this. So he is basically hoping that by an executive order, he accomplishes two things. Number one, he pleases his base. I mean, the base can say, yes, you know, yes, he wrote an executive order about this, or he wrote an executive order about that. So that's a lot of this is pandering to the base. The other thing is that he's hoping that they don't get challenged in the courts. Now, my sense is that they will be challenged in the courts. I'm pretty sure that the Attorney General of Texas is already working on a challenge to the border and a challenge to the deportations, because look, this has an impact with states, and particularly the border states. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see the Attorney General of Texas filing an injunction. I think that's the right word, to stop all of this, or at least put it in the hands of a judge. And again, they're going to be asking the same question I'm asking. Where does he get the authority to change a law that was passed by Congress? Well, he doesn't really have that authority, in my opinion, So a lot of this stuff is going to end up in the Supreme Court. And hopefully the Supreme Court will handle this, but it may be a while. So many of these executive orders are going to end up in the courts, and we're not really going to have a decision on these executive orders probably for quite some time. So this is, you know, when it's all said and done, as I said before, he's basically pandering here. He's basically pandering to different groups of the Democrat coalition. That's all he's doing. He's pandering to these groups and letting them know how much he appreciates the fact that they turned out to vote for him. That's all that this is. But in terms of moving the ball forward or changing things dramatically, they don't really change much of anything because, again, this stuff has to eventually go to the Congress, and I don't think the Congress is going to cancel the Keystone Pipeline. I just don't see that happening. And I don't think the Congress is going to cancel the construction of the wall because it's just not going to happen. So anyway, just a lot of pandering. Just remember that. Just a lot of pandering and another indication that President Biden doesn't think that he's got the votes to do any of this. So he's just doing it through executive order. That's about as much as I can tell you about all of this. Now, you know, they were talking a great deal. They were talking about a great deal about potential violence in Washington during the inauguration. There really wasn't any. I mean, incredible. There was nothing. Nothing happened. In fact, the town was pretty empty. There weren't a lot of people there. But it's interesting, last night, or this would have been the 20th evening, there was a lot of violence in Portland. I mean, there were several, I guess, radical groups that went out and took it out on Joe Biden. They went after the Democrat Party offices, and they were marching using four-letter words to describe the new president. And these are people from the left. And it's interesting, one of the lines that I saw, or one of the placards that they were showing said, We don't want Biden. We want revenge. So whatever that means, that's what they were shouting in the streets of Portland. So it's going to be interesting how this mayor of Portland handles this now that Joe Biden is in the White House. Because, look, he's going to be asking the Congress for money to clean up the city after all of this that we've seen for months. And, I don't see a lot of money in this Congress that will be spent for projects like that. So, the mayor of Portland at some point is going to have to stop these rebellions if for no other reason than to keep businesses from leaving his city. I mean, businesses are leaving Portland like crazy. And why wouldn't you leave Portland? I mean, when you have a city out of control like this. So we'll see. We'll see how it all works out. One quick thing that I wanted to say, we talk a lot about the media and Trump derangement syndrome. We saw a lot of that during the coverage of the inauguration. I mean, the media was basically going nuts, absolutely crazy over Joe Biden. And this great love affair with Joe Biden coming to save us from the terrible Trump. And I thought in many ways it was revolting. I mean, you couldn't even keep up with it because it was so obviously biased that I just ended up not watching much of it. I saw parts of it, but not really much of it, because frankly, I don't have the time. And number two, why watch journalists, behave like a bunch of children, talking about how great it is that Trump is gone and how wonderful it is that we have a new president and all this kind of stuff. You know, I guess they're entitled to their opinion. I don't have a problem with their opinions, but I mean, come on. Stop calling yourself journalist if you're going to engage in that really outrageous love affair with our new president. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Thank you. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, the 21st of January. Well, you know, I have a post today over at my blog and over at MeWe, which is that social media site that I've been posting here recently. And it's about the fact that the Trump administration, one of the things that they did is that they designated Cuba as a terror state or terrorist state. And we don't usually think of Cuba as a terrorist state in the sense that we think of Iran and or North Korea or whatever. But Cuba has been engaging a great deal of repression at home. So I'm glad to see that the Trump administration took this step. And I'm also happy to see that the Biden administration did not cancel that particular designation. Hopefully they'll keep it. They'll keep it because that's exactly what the Castro dictatorship deserves, to be called a terror state, because that's what they are. So I'm happy that at least this particular law was not changed by the incoming administration. Now, one of the big things that you're going to hear from President Biden and his administration is going to be about immigration. They're going to be devoting a tremendous amount of time and talk and presentation to the question of immigration. And the objective is that they want to legalize the 11 million people who are here. They want to legalize them. Actually, I think it'd be maybe more than 11, but let's just say 11 because that's the figure that I hear. So let's just say 11, whatever the number is. They want to legalize these people and put them on some kind of a path to citizenship. And then they also want to take care of the so-called Dreamers, which is what DACA is all about. Now, DACA right now, one of the executive orders was about DACA, but that doesn't make any sense because DACA right now is in front of the courts. And until the courts tell us whether DACA is constitutional or not, I mean, what the heck are we doing talking about DACA? So I'm not sure why, you know, they listed DACA or Dreamers as one of the executive orders. But the citizenship question is going to have to go to the Congress. And that is going to be, I think, a very contentious issue. I can tell you right now, looking at this Senate, this is a 50-50 Senate. Technically, the Democrats have a majority because the 50-50 tie was broken by the vice president, and that allows the Democrats to have a majority in title, only in title, really, because it's not often that you get 50-50 votes in the Senate. But when it comes to immigration, I guarantee you that the Democrats do not have 50 votes. I'm pretty sure, do not have the vote of John Tester up in Montana or Joe Manchin in West Virginia. Those two Democrats are not on board. So they really have 48, and I'm not sure of those 48 exactly how many they can count on. But the problem is that as long as you have in any immigration proposal a path to citizenship, you lose me, and I'm a legal immigrant, but you lose me, and you lose a lot of people. Because a path to citizenship for people who violated the law is not doable. Now, I have argued for years that the way we legalize these people, it's not so much to give them citizenship or to give them a green card. The way you legalize these individuals is to say, look, we're going to let you stay in the country. We're going to give you a work visa that allows you to work in the country. You can work in the United States legally. We're going to give you a document, and you can keep working where you're working, and this document will give you legalization as far as your job is concerned. And then if you want to go in and out of the country, you can do that. But it's not a green card. It's not a path to citizenship. That is the only thing, in my opinion, that would get 60 votes. Anything else is not going to get 60 votes in the Senate, which means nothing is going to happen. So we'll see. We'll see what the exact proposal is when President Biden presents it. But I guarantee you that there are not 60 votes in the U.S. Senate right now to pass a immigration reform or whatever you want to call it that includes a path to citizenship. I don't see that anywhere. On this day in history, just a quick reminder here, back in 1977 on this day, President Carter pardoned all the draft dodgers. So the Vietnam draft dodgers, of course. And that was controversial, but anyway, that was a long time ago. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.